Well, here we are now. Let me make sure that you can hear my soundboard. I got your clips pulled up here. Producer Chris is here.
Oh, hey.
Hello, Producer Chris.
Larry. Just hearing Larry's voice makes everything better.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I feel a lot better now.
Oh, a lot of people disagree about that.
Oh, yeah.
Trust me. Some are right under this roof.
Most of them are in the Discord right now. So you won't be able to get to see the fun people making fun of us as we go here, Larry. That's one of the disadvantages.
Well, that's probably better that way, isn't it? I'm sure.
Yeah, getting distracted by the Discord has really been fucking me up lately. All right. This is a bonus show. This is a crossover. It's a bonus show for That Larry Show. It's a bonus show for Who Are These Podcasts? Now, for what I do on my bonus shows, I take a much more relaxed approach. There isn't a lot of structure to it. We kind of just go. Okay. So I don't know how you feel about that, because this is your show too. Sure. So,
sure. Hey, it's your movie, Carl. I'm just a cast member. So any way you want to run it is good for me.
Beautiful. Then in that case, we're going to get started. I actually did put together a crossover intro for us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So let's check it out.
It's showtime.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
WATP.
That's a fucking winner. I love it.
All right. We are doing the first ever crossover event between That Larry Show and Who Are These Podcasts. I am your host, Carl, and with me from sunny California is Larry Blydner.
Hello, 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 hello. Nice to see you. How are you? How are you?
I'm excited about this, Larry. We're going to do something that I haven't really attempted before. Mm-hmm. As a bonus show or otherwise, we're going to talk about some political shows. We're going to break down. I listened to a show that claims to be the largest political podcast on the web, the NPR Politics Podcast, hosted by Tamara Keith. And then we also have some podcasts that are hosted by politicians, which should be a lot of fun as well, I would think. Where do you want to get started? Where do you want to go on the board here, Larry? It's your show.
No. You pick it, Carl. This is your, how do I say that? Métier, you know? Man, go ahead. I'll just tag along.
Sounds good. Let's start with the NPR Politics Podcast. This is a daily show, and people who have listened to WATP over the years know how I feel about NPR. Not a fan. I don't find their content all that compelling. I don't think the broadcasters are very good at broadcasting, and I think everyone who listens to NPR has a stick up their ass and thinks they're smarter than everybody else. Oh, I listened to 8 hours of NPR today. Did ya? No shit. Congrats.
You're so fucking right.
Yeah, somebody put in the Discord here, defund NPR. And I will tell you, there was a time when the National Public Radio, our tax dollars, pay for this. There was a time when they pretended not to have advertising. Right. They used to have underwriters. The show was made possible by, and it wasn't an advertisement. There was no call to action. You would just explain the company that was helping to fund the show. Well, that has all changed now. And I'll play you the ad. And I don't know if the same ad appeared for you when you listened to this, Larry, but I heard this and I was taken aback.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe explains the importance of creating a safe space for therapy.
I can't tell you how many times I've had clients that say that expression, like, I've never told that to anybody. That's when I know I've made some kind of momentous move with this person. They feel safe enough to expose that part of themselves, and doing that together with somebody else can be very powerful.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/politics.
Now, a couple of things I want to point out about this ad. First off, I went to their website to figure out how I could buy advertising on NPR. And did you know that research shows NPR sponsorship messages generate 20% more listener engagement than commercial radio ads?
Wow.
Wow. I wonder how you That's measure amazing. Such a thing. Listener engagement.
Who knew?
I've been in marketing and advertising for a very long time. These are nonsense words.
Of course they are.
Listener engagement, whatever the fuck, however you measure that. What I think is really funny, though, is when you go to their website, that was a mid-roll ad that we just heard, and you go to products, and you go to podcast mid-roll, and it tells you all the specs, and it gives you a little sales spiel here. At the bottom, it's like an e-commerce site. Related products, podcast post-roll, podcast pre-roll. It's like customers who liked our mid-roll also enjoyed our pre-roll. Like that's kind of fucked right there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the... There's something about the way they carry off everything that just always has put my teeth on edge. The phony, dripping sincerity, that we're so above it all. We're so educated. They're always, no matter where they are, they're talking down to people, invariably, even with their stupid ads.
They don't think they need to be entertaining or interesting because they think they're so smart, the smartest people in the room at all times. All right, so the other problem I have with this ad is it's for this company called BetterHelp. Are you familiar with these guys, Larry?
I'm not.
BetterHelp is online therapy. All right? And there's some controversy around this. The terms of service explicitly state that the company can't guarantee a professional or even a licensed professional will work with you. Listen to this. I'm going to read this to you.
So this is like a phone-in psychic.
Yes. Oh, this is like if you just need a friend to talk to. You can pay someone $150, or I think it's $65 a week, but you pay it monthly is like the plan. So, all right, this is from their website, BetterHelp's website. We do not control the quality of the counselor services, and we do not determine whether any counselor is qualified to provide any specific service, as well as whether a counselor is categorized correctly to match correctly to you. Didn't they just say, go to BetterHelp and we'll find a counselor that matched to your needs or something like that? Yeah. Was that the ad copy of that?
Get a fucking cam girl. Do a lot more good than this shit.
Right. And you'll be done quicker. Like, all right, I got that out of my system.
Something to show for it, a crunchy Kleenex.
So apparently a lot of YouTubers have BetterHelp as their sponsor. And I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole here, but this is a specific YouTuber talking about how she was approached by BetterHelp to sponsor her channel. And so she got a free trial of BetterHelp before she did the sponsorship. And this was her experience.
I had a horrible experience, and I'm not trying to be dramatic. Listen, BetterHelp, it's online therapist, so it really depends on the therapist, I imagine. And I imagine there's a lot of great success stories and people that have been helped. I'm not trying to discount that. I'm not trying to imply that those other YouTubers are lying to you or tricking you in any way. Maybe they did the free trial and it was just magic and they loved it and they are just spreading the word. But I have to make this video because I had such a horrible experience and I couldn't in good conscience after doing the trial recommend it to you guys as much as I wanted to. I'm not gonna lie, I wanted to, but I could not. I literally could not because that's how bad the experience was.
Larry, I'm only doing this. I don't normally do deep dives into the advertisers on podcasts, but because it's NPR... Yeah. Funded by our tax dollars. I wanted to look into, like, are they just accepting anybody's money? I even saw a video of PewDiePie, which I always pronounce incorrectly. PewDiePie.
Really?
Explaining how shitty BetterHelp is. This seems to be a thing that's pretty well known.
Wow. Well, there was no ambivalence about her appraisal of that outfit, was there? You know, be a good way. Is it possible to, like, tab their channel with her video? But probably couldn't be. They probably have comments turned off or whatever. But
oh yeah, the CEO has come out. I mean, he's been on the defensive quite a bit because there have been a lot of claims of these people's shenanigans. But whatever. Let's talk about NPR politics podcast. Yeah. Right at the intro, I know this show is not for me because it has to start out with some cutesy little thing.
Hi, this is Terry Milnes in Bellingham, Washington, and I'm a fully grown, capable, intelligent woman who just spent half the day making Bernie Sanders memes. This podcast was recorded at
1:11 p.m. on the 22nd of January.
Things may have changed by the time you hear it. Hopefully, I'm not still making memes. Okay, here's the show.
All right, so, all right, we have the Bernie Sanders thing. It's hilarious. Yeah. Also, these idiots don't realize that you're not on the radio. No one expects a podcast to be live. They have to tell you this was pre-recorded? Yeah, no shit. We know that. They really cannot figure out what this new medium is.
But not only that, they have to tell, everything has to be couched, in the vibe of, aren't I cute? It's just like, hey, honey, just say, hey, this is recorded. But no, I got to do, I'm doing Bernie Sanders memes. Aren't I cute? Every fucking thing they say is, I'm cute. You ever notice that?
Yes. And they giggle at themselves all the time,
and
too,
they giggle
over it.
Right.
So this is right after that happens. This is the big reveal here on why you heard them insert the 1:11 p.m. like they had to put it in afterwards.
Funny story. I was so busy looking at Bernie Sanders memes, I kind of forgot to say the time.
That's not a funny story. She was so busy looking at Bernie Sanders memes, because those are so fucking funny, that she forgot to say the time.
And her laugh was so fake. It reminded me of, I don't know if you were a fan of the old Second City show with John Candy.
Yeah.
But John used to do exactly that laugh when he was doing, like, I forget it was with her, Count the Tongue or Johnny LaRue or something. Same exact laugh she just did.
There's never anything funny going on these shows, but these women want to make it seem like they're enjoying themselves. Oh, also, did you notice that music that came on? That was like really cheesy. And I realized, remember Politipod, the podcast we made fun of because it used to have Tom Myers on it? Their music, is they must be listening to NPR because this is the Politipod intro.
Welcome to Politipod, where we join you for fun with politics, governance, and more. I'm your host, Matt Nisenoff.
So the only thing worse than NPR, people were trying to sound like NPR.
<That's so true. laughs> You're right.
They're not only ruining podcasts on their network, they're ruining podcasts on other networks as well.
The question is, what kind of a mind do you have to tune that shit in and stick with it for more than 9 seconds?
I don't think anyone's paying attention, right? I think they're just zoning out.
I think there are a sizable portion of people who hear that shit and they get that kumbaya, let's link arms and sing songs and swing by the campfire kind of vibe from it, and it makes them feel good.
I hope they go fuck themselves after that kumbaya experience. All right, let's get into this hot political talk that's going on. Now, you have three women on this show who all agree with each other on every single point that they make, which is always good for a political show. And they have no idea what they're talking about. This is getting into the variants in the virus.
And part of, Dr. Fauci talked yesterday. He's now the chief medical advisor for President Biden. He talked about these mutations, these mutant strains of the virus. And he said that these variants are a reason to try to make sure you're getting people vaccinated and you're wearing masks, because if you can... less spread of the virus means less mutants. Is that right?
Nope.
No. I think she was trying to sound intelligent, but I zoomed in on one part of that statement.
Because if you can less spread of the virus.
Because if you can less spread of the virus.
Yes.
These are educated women on NPR explaining how any of this works. And then, Larry, of course, the answer to that non-question is this.
Doubling down on the things that we know work, like wearing masks or even doubling your mask if you're going to be somewhere like on a plane for a while.
Oh, boy. It's the double mask theory that's been so popular lately.
Carl, was that AOC?
That was not AOC.
It sounds exactly like her. Somebody should do like a voice pattern thing on recognition. I mean, that sounded like her, didn't it?
Well, that woman actually used English words, so I don't think that was AOC. I could be wrong.
All right.
Now, this idea that if one mask is good, two masks are better, why not four masks, Larry? Why aren't we putting a face shield in front of us with four masks and a helmet? And I want to remind everybody again, I know I talked about this on the Creep Off, but Dr. Fauci, less than a year ago, went on 60 Minutes and explained that masks do not help.
There's a lot of confusion among people and misinformation surrounding face masks. Can you discuss that?
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
Oh, weird. I never hear anyone talk about that anymore. Isn't it just that masks will save your life in every scenario? Is that what everybody says now? Like, that's obviously the truth. What happened to that common sense of you fuck with your face way more often when you're wearing a mask?
Doesn't matter anymore. Just doesn't matter.
Larry, I would opine that if you have two masks, you might double your fucking with your face and your masks.
I would think so. And then God knows what other bacteria and detritus gets trapped between the additional layers.
Right.
But I saw a great meme this morning over in that No Agenda Social channel. And it was a basically the statement was a picture of Fauci. And he says, in order to slow the spread of COVID from now on, we want everyone to insert a lubricated finger in the rectum and walk around all day long.
Well, at least it's lubricated. It could be worse.
And the next panel is like these three schmoofs lined up at, it's Costco or Home Depot. And they've both got a finger in their ass and they're standing by the booth that says, sanitary lubricant. So it's not far off, really.
Guys, that's why we got started late today. It's because we were too busy looking at hilarious memes about people shoving fingers up their assholes. We're past the Bernie memes. We're over that. But
yes.
Another thing that you'll always hear on a show like this with three women on NPR talking about the inauguration is just how amazing Michelle Obama looks at all times. This is Aisha Roscoe's takeaway from the inauguration.
There was a particular hairstyle statement with the former First Lady, Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Her hair was laid.
It was incredible.
She looked like Charlie's Angels. It had that Farrah Fawcett, and she had the plum jumpsuit.
Have you ever heard a man compliment Michelle Obama on her looks, Larry?
No.
It's always women gushing about how beautiful she is.
That's
even
true.
Her wig's amazing, according to these people. Like, all right. She looks like a man. I don't understand that. Maybe that's why you're attracted to her.
Well, the funny thing about the whole situation with that is those three women are probably very feminist style thing and things,
sure.
And think that looks really shouldn't matter, yet they gush about it.
I know.
For a long time. It's really weird. I years ago I worked for a woman's magazine, if you can imagine me doing that. It was a really bizarre experience. And it was one of these, we are women, hear us roar, we're taking over the world, and that's fine. And so one day there was a rubber chicken dinner and the publisher got up to speak to this it's like a Hilton Hotel full of advertisers or whatever. And she says, I was like, my jaw just hit the table. She goes, what's the first thing that comes into an executive woman in the morning before she starts her day?
A dildo?
No.
Oh.
What should I wear?
Oh, God.
And I thought, well, okay. That's substantive. What should I wear?
So that's what the magazine had to figure out for these people.
Yeah. Yeah. What should I wear?
Wow.
So, there you go.
All right. You want to talk immigration reform?
Sure.
These women get into it.
Do they?
Yes. Sure. We got to solve this problem we had with immigration. I'm going to play a clip and just zoom in on this woman trying to say the word citizenship. She has a hard time with it.
It would provide a path to citizenship for an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the U.S. It would fast-track citizenship for the young Dreamer immigrants, those who were brought to the country by their parents, and some other, you know, some other people who are in the country illegally.
Whoa. I don't think she meant to say that. Did she just say people were in the country illegally?
Legally.
It's funny, too, because she has all the newspeak terms where it's, you know, undocumented immigrants and dreamers.
Hasn't she seen that lawn sign? The lawn sign says no person is illegal. Right. What's the matter with her?
People can't be illegal. And then she used the word illegal. I know that's not the word she wanted to use on that one.
No.
This is a brilliant plan. This is part of Biden's plan. So that we don't have illegal immigrants coming into the country anymore. Mm-hmm. This is definitely going to work.
This plan would also call for aid to places like El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, under this idea that if you help the countries themselves and the people within the countries won't flee the countries looking for more opportunities or a better life.
Larry, our government can't give citizens more than $600 over 8 months when they're forced not to work. They can't even afford their rent. And we're going to go give money to South America to fix immigration?
Of course. You know, the whole problem is if they could just sort of get Elizabeth Warren's tax on the, you know, the top, whatever, to help billionaires, whatever.
Right.
You and I, we'd be sitting here, we'd be doing these from Rolls Royces right now.
Everybody.
It's all their fault. Those
Jeff
guys.
Bezos just got to chip in a few extra bucks and then we can get this all figured out. But this has been tried. We've given money to South America. The governments steal it. They're corrupt.
They don't go
to the places we want them to go to. This is a dumb idea. This makes no sense.
No.
The real way to fix the problem, and I don't mind saying this right here and now, Larry, I don't care who hears it. The real way to fix it is to change the words that we use.
It would also, interestingly enough, it would replace the term alien in U.S. immigration laws and use non-citizen instead of alien.
That's been kind of a sleeper major priority for Democrats. It's not something that they talk about a ton because they have a lot of bigger top line issues that they're pushing for. But it's something that I've actually heard people talk about a lot, is that they feel like the federal government needs to change the language around immigration in order to change the policy approaches.
Will changing words fix anybody's life?
No, but it clearly is the way to befuddle the imbeciles who don't understand words, isn't it? So, you know, that's what they've done. It went from aliens to illegal immigrants to undocumented immigrants to now it's dreamers. You're a dreamer.
Dreamers is the funniest one. Dreamers is, all right, so the parents are going to have a kid. So they quick hurry over the border so they can give birth to the kid in the country, right? Or is it after they're born, they send them into the country? How does that work? What's a dreamer?
Well, that was an anchor baby, right?
But.
But I think the dreamer thing is a much softer, nicer overall, you know, umbrella term that just makes everybody wonderful. I'm a dreamer. Aren't you a dreamer?
We're all dreamers, man.
We're all dreamers.
But you can't say the American dream.
No, that's a bad thing. The American dream is dead, and nobody gets it because, well, you know, it's just, this is a bad place filled with bad people.
That would mean you were a nationalist if you said you cared about the American dream. And we know
that
nationalist and white supremacist is the same thing. I love that they're going to change the word alien, and that's going to fix any fucking problems. Like, that's actually a pretty big priority for the Democratic Party. We got to get the word alien out of the fucking law books. Okay.
Sure.
You guys go for that. You guys are making a lot of important moves right now in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, but that's what they do. I mean, that's what it's all about. You got to admit, Carl, that the left are masters, and we'll get into this in a couple of, I'm sure, the clips I sent you. You know, they're the champions of propaganda and controlling the vocabulary. They really are. And it's served them so well. It's worked for them. You know, it's how they got to where they are right now, because most people are stupid and they don't understand the shades and variances in words from word to word. They just don't.
And before we piss too many more people off, I just want to point out, I don't know Larry's politics outside of listening to his show, having a few conversations with him. I can say the one thing I knew we had in common is that we both don't like communism. So no, I think that's where we're coming at this from, in case anybody's wondering what this is. Let's get into your clips, Larry. What did you bring for us today?
Let me pull up my clips for Carl file here, and I've got I've got some doozies from the interview of Pete Buttigieg interviewing Hillary, and it really is. It's like this thing should almost be. It should almost have parental warnings on it because it's like a mutual masturbation thing.
Yeah, I know.
It really is. It's crazy.
There's nothing worse than two politicians who are in the same party talking to each other. It is just such a bore fest. It's very difficult to get through, but also they just lap up everything the other person says the entire time.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, that's what they do. So I don't know. Anyway, if you want to cue them up or however you want to do this.
Yeah. So this is The Deciding Decade with Pete Buttigieg. He has a podcast where he's interviewing different people every episode. This was the final episode of this season. And Hillary Clinton's his big get. Oh, let's find out what Hillary has to say about this. Where do we start here?
I think, you know, if you want to start with the first one is very funny. It's clip. It should be tab clip one trajectory with Pete, sort of the intro. I thought it was kind of amusing.
You know, we call it the deciding decade because it's really about how the decisions that are being made now are going to shape the trajectory of the country.
Yes.
Well, gee whiz. The decisions that are made now will shape the trajectory of the country. Really? Wow. What a concept.
It's the first decade where that's
Pete
says, been the
Pete
truth.
You can't say the direction of the country, the path. It has to be trajectory. You ever notice with these people? Always, you know, if it's one or two syllables, no good. If you can put in a 4, 5, 6, 7 syllable word, well, now you're smart.
Yes.
The trajectory of the country.
They do love trying to sound smart to each other.
Yes.
In this entire conversation. But yeah, I love it that this is the decade, not any previous decades. This is the decade that's going to determine the future of our country.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that is true. I mean, that yes, it is.
Yeah, gee whiz. I mean, thanks, Pete. Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because he's pretty much made it seem like this is going to be a 10-year-long podcast.
That's right.
It's the whole decade.
Yes. And once he's running American Transportation, will he continue this podcast? That's what I want to know.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you think?
I have to play you this clip. So he's been tapped by Biden to be the Secretary of Transportation. And I want to play for you his experience and the reason why he's the right man for this job. This is great.
You know, I think about it from the perspective of my own community, South Bend. I mean, our city is named after a bend in a river, and that waterway created trade routes. And then our community really emerged around the transportation industry.
He's from South Bend. Of course he knows about transportation. There's a river and it curves. It's like a bend to the south.
Of course. And, you know, when he first got the nomination, I don't have the clip, but I remember his reasons for thinking that he would be is suited to this job was, number one, he likes to travel. He likes that.
Okay.
He likes to travel. He's been on trains. He was once on a cruise. And the real clincher was he proposed to his husband at an airport.
The most romantic place on earth right there.
What more do you want? And I thought to myself, you know, I'm so stupid. I actually, no lie, proposed to my wife on an airplane, 30,000 feet.
Look at you.
And I thought, why the fuck? If I had a brain in my head, I'd be, hey, I want to be transportation secretary. Come on. I like travel too. So, you know, shame on me.
I got married at a Chili's too. I don't know. I'm trying to one-up you. But it's funny too because Pete asked Hillary for advice. Because Hillary was the Secretary of State, so she knows about being in a presidential cabinet. And her response to him is so telling. She goes, well, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to learn about transportation policy and get up to speed on all things transportation. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably a good idea. Yes. I should probably know a little thing or two about transportation policy if I'm going to be the Secretary of Transportation. Great point, Hillary.
And then her second, she went from get up to speed on transportation. The next part was, I don't know, let's see what clip is that. I think that's clip, what the hell is this? Oh, clip three. Give that a click.
All right.
You're going to be part of climate change. You have to be part of the overall administration approach to climate change. You have to be part of trying to restore confidence in public transportation post-pandemic. We cannot deal with climate change. We cannot get essential frontline workers to their jobs if people are afraid to take public transportation. What is that going to take? And how much of an investment is required?
Whoa, that's all over the fucking place.
So first of all, you know, hear ye, let it be known, transportation is climate change.
Yes.
Of course it's climate change. Of course it is. And then let's get those frontline workers in there, because how the fuck have they been getting to work for the last 12 months? I guess not. I guess nobody, I don't understand who's been staffing the fucking hospitals. Because nobody wants to go in public transportation. How do we restore confidence in public transportation?
Don't you understand that all of our lives are now dependent on Pete Buttigieg and the decisions he makes as the Secretary of Transportation? That's pretty much what you just said. Frontline workers are going to need to take a train in New York, and you're responsible for making that happen. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, and they even bring up, like, yeah, there's going to be some big project like high-speed rail. You live in California. How is the government putting in some high-speed rail? How's that working out?
Yeah. Well, you know, that thing was cooking for a while, and the billions and billions went down the tube just on studies for it, just on the studies. And every time they do another study, the price went up another 50-100%. And the last call, I think they said the high-speed rail from L.A. to San Francisco would be about $100 billion.
Yeah.
And then somehow, I guess, maybe COVID, something sidelined it. So you haven't heard much about. Maybe it was riots. I don't know. But that's gone away. But it'll be back, I'm sure.
So what you're describing right now is what happens all the time with government projects and programs is it always costs more than it should. There's always all these people trying to get their beak wet and get a portion of the money. Hillary at one point is talking about how she worked with a congressman from the city of Buffalo, and the two of them were putting together a bill to fund a hospital in Buffalo. And she says something here that just, I stopped in my tracks. I'm like, why would she say that? Give us a listen.
When I was a senator, I worked with a Republican member of the House who represented Buffalo, the Buffalo area in New York, to earmark money to help a local hospital expand its research capacity. It was certainly worthy. It withstood scrutiny. There was no funny business, but it brought us together. So we had a working relationship.
Why would she say there was no funny business involved in this? Unless maybe Crooked Hillary has been involved in some things where there was funny business. Because Pete Buttigieg isn't going to ask, is there any funny business going on?
Right.
Why did she need to say that? She's like, we earmarked this money. It was going to go into a real thing. It wasn't going to my brother-in-law. You know, it wasn't that debacle in Haiti. This was a real thing that I was doing. It's not like the Clinton Foundation. This was like money that was going to go to the people that we said we were going to give it to. Why do you feel the need to explain that, Hillary?
And she also said at the top of it that it was kind of like an earth-shattering proclamation. I worked with the Republicans. Is that what she said? She said something like that.
Yes.
In other words, like I can be with others that are not of my ilk. And it's just so fucking bizarre.
I know. Well, she's the hero in every story. And I have to say, I don't think I'm going to be offending anybody when I say that Hillary Clinton is an egomaniac. Mm. And the question that Pete asks her is a very weird question to ask someone who is an egomaniac.
What have your ways been of just staying rooted and grounded in who you are as a person? And how do you keep that robust to all of these narratives and images and everything that just kind of swirls around you the more visible you get?
How does she stay grounded? Hillary Clinton.
You take away her broom. That's how.
That's the answer.
That's so the answer.
The answer she gives is one of the most bizarre things. It really is a peek into the mind of Hillary Clinton and the shit that she thinks about.
But if you are comparing yourself to somebody that is really in a terrible spot, who has all kinds of, you know, health problems, who's, you know, lost a child to gun violence, whatever it might be.
Whoa. The way she stays grounded is by comparing herself to somebody who lost a child to gun violence?
Yes.
Where the fuck did that come from?
It's really out there.
This is a woman. She's like, you know, I have a very tough life, but there's people out there who have it worse than I do. You think?
You think,
Hillary?
But that's the way they operate. It's always, you know, there's never any facts, anything like that. It's always just, how can I suck feelings into this in some way and compare myself to somebody that lost a kid that got shot? I mean, that's always what it is. How can I pluck your heartstrings and do head fakes in that manner? And that's what they do. That's just what they do.
What normal person on a podcast would bring up gun violence when asked how you stay humble?
Yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. Okay. So right when she comes on, and this really annoys the shit out of me, because politicians and also people in the media can never stop sucking their own dicks.
Never.
They think they're doing such an amazing service to everyone. Give this a lesson. It's a quick one.
And today, to close out this series, I wanted to speak with one of the most recognizable leaders of our time, someone who has dedicated her life to service.
She's dedicated her life to public service. Did you know that, Larry?
I knew that. Oh, you know, I wanted to mention that. I backtimed this, Carl.
Yeah.
And fucking Pete gave her a 90-second introduction.
Oh, yeah.
90 seconds. And then he bookended on the ass end with another 30 seconds of accolades.
How amazing.
Okay,
she
is. So it's like, what? You know, I mean, if it was God himself, it would just be, here's Jesus. But Hillary gets 90 full seconds of ass kissing. It's insane.
She dedicated her life to servicing people. She didn't even service her husband.
Yeah.
What are we talking about here? All right, according to NBC, her and Bill made a combined $154 million in the 4 years after Bill's presidency, from 2001 to 2005, on speeches alone. I'm really getting tired of these multi-millionaires who go into government and say that they're public servants and they're serving a community and they're serving us. You're a fucking liar.
What they are is parasites.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
They're fucking parasites. And, you know, I don't know whether there's an enormous number of Congress people that are already millionaires. And it's a given that, you know, no matter what, even if they put in one term and they get out, they will soon be multimillionaires just from peddling influence.
Right.
It's mind numbing. You know, I did a thing for one of my shows recently, Carl, and I was just curious. The top five Congress people, in terms of tenure, right?
Yeah.
They have a combined tenure, these five stains, of 184 years.
I heard that on your show.
And across the aisle in the Senate, okay, those top fivers, 200 years. You've got, they're older than the country. The top 10 Congress wonks have been farting through seats in that chamber for 400 years.
And that actually brings me to the next point that I wanted to make. Hillary is talking about Mitch McConnell. And look, at I am no fan of Mitch McConnell, people.
Chinless Mitch.
This is not somebody who I'm going to be championing. But listen to what Hillary says about what Mitch is up to, and I will tell you what the solution is.
Mitch McConnell's a perfect example. I mean, he lives in one of the poorest states where people have really suffered. They've suffered under the pandemic. They've suffered under the economy. He has been resistant to providing additional help. He seems mostly interested in protecting a class of donors who want to be free from any liability if they get those, you know, meat lines and chicken lines and other kinds of, you know, work going again. And somehow we've got to break that tie.
All right. I have the answer to this. You ready, Larry?
I'm ready.
Term limits. It's that easy.
Term limits, yeah.
That's why these people have to work with their donors so much, because they have to keep raising money to keep getting reelected.
Of course. Yeah. But they'll never vote for term limits.
No.
Why would they? They're monarchs. I mean, it's unbelievable.
She never even comes to the conclusion. It would never even be brought up by these people. That would actually solve all of these problems. By the way, she said something at the very end there that I just thought was funny, so I pulled it out as an ISO. Hey, Hillary, what type of food do you like?
Thai.
I just thought that was for me. That wasn't for you.
With hot sauce? Yeah.
All right, what else you got on this show?
Oh, this is a good one. Clip four.
All right.
Hillary on the electoral vote.
And so when I was asked if I would be a member of the Electoral College, I paused for a minute because I've been on record since 2000 advocating for its abolition. I think it has long outlasted any usefulness that it had. But at the same time, I thought it would be a good signal that we were all coming together to participate in this historic constitutional ritual.
Right. So she hates the Electoral College. Yes. She's been for its abolishment for 20 years. However, she'll gladly participate because it's a chance to stick a knife in Orange Man's back.
Yes, of course.
I mean, what kind of fucking morons did these people take us for? You know, oh, it's a chance to come together in this ritual. Yes, yeah, a sacrifice ritual, a murder ritual.
Yeah, I know. I know this whole idea that we got to now unite and we're all going to be as one. And also, yes, we are going to send impeachment to the Senate. And we just want to keep fucking with this guy who has no control anymore.
Yeah.
He can't even run his business because all the fucking banks have shut him down. It's like, I think he got his comeuppance. You guys are good.
But they want to keep, beating the dead horse. And they will.
Well, speaking of that, Hillary talks about voter fraud. And the claims that were made about this last election not being completely up to snuff.
You have every right to make a fair argument against an outcome of an election if there's evidence and facts to back it up. But when there isn't, it's time to retreat and concede.
Wow. That's some balls. This woman has been talking about Russian collusion and Putin being the force that got Trump elected for four. She's still doing it. It's been going on for 4 years now. There's no evidence. There was a 2-year investigation into it. They couldn't find anything. In fact, it was just declassified back in October that Hillary's camp was actually the one that started this whole Russian collusion narrative to try to distract from her fucking email debacle.
Yes.
And she has the balls to go out and be like, look it, you just got to let it go, man. You didn't win the election. Why can't you just let it go? Fuck you.
I'll tell you what I know about voter fraud, Carl.
Yeah.
In 2016, I went to a poll to vote. Okay. And you know how it works. I mean, you get some wonk sitting at a big table and they open up this enormous ledger and then you tell them your name and their finger slides down the grid and there you are. Right. And so I say, here I am. And this woman goes, oh no, you already voted. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So they didn't ask for any ID, nothing. Just come on in. You know, it's just clearly some fuck looked at that ledger before I got there, pointed and cast a vote in my name.
Yep.
So there was kind of a shitstorm there, whatever. I don't know if was ever resolved. I mean, I did vote, was accounted. I have no idea. And all I know is 4 years later, right, with all this mail-in stuff, there are four people in my household. We were sent 8 ballots.
That makes sense.
Okay, so anybody who says there's no voter fraud going on, my answer is, fuck you, I know better.
Well, especially because there were so many mail-in ballots. Who knows how many people voted twice? Just from that alone, mail it in and go to the polling station the day that you can. Of course that was going on. And this idea that it's all baseless claims and there's never any voting fraud, it's insane.
Baseless.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, this is... This is really a great question that that Pete asks, and I gotta ask you after you hear this how you would answer this question.
Okay,
I wonder as we come into the 2020s, how you think the role of state and local government in politics has evolved, and what you think some of the opportunities ahead are.
I think that's such a great question, Pete. And
wrong.
That is not a great question. That is a nothing question. How has the role of local government in politics evolved, and what are some of the opportunities ahead? That doesn't mean anything.
Well, it's great for her. It gives her a chance to bloviate, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes. She can start talking about gun violence, I'm sure.
Gun violence and climate change. Is the edge of that. Yeah.
Since we're playing this game of how would you answer this, I have another participation game here. I'm going to play you a clip. Now, there were ads in Pete Buttigieg's show for other podcasts.
Yes.
I don't know if he's on some kind of a network or what's going on there, but all I need you to do is repeat back what you hear, Larry, okay?
Okay.
So listen closely.
Hey, y'all, what's up? It's Jess Hilarious, and I'm just making sure y'all know that I got a podcast called Carefully Reckless on the Black Effect Network.
What the hell are you talking about?
Did you catch that?
Yeah, but I couldn't possibly repeat that.
You don't think
I don't know what
you
said.
I love this part. This is my favorite part right here.
I got a podcast.
I got a podcast.
I got a podcast.
Well, there you go. Oh, got one. Whatever that was.
I love it. That might make it into my cold opens from now on. It'll be like...
Are you a boner guy?
I got a podcast.
Who said that? That was good.
That would be Greg Opie Hughes asking if you're a boner guy.
Okay, it's
right
good.
There. another fun thing that Hillary does, because she doesn't have a real personality, she's pretending to have one. It's almost like her personality is a software program that glitches a lot. It's got a lot of bugs in it.
It does.
What the fuck is funny about this question? He brings up that she used to be a senator.
So you're also a veteran of the U.S. Senate, which is a challenging place in the best of times.
What is she? Even Pete's just like, well, I'm not making a joke. You were a senator. I wanted to ask you about that. She's just so impressed with herself.
That's hysterical to her, I guess. Well, wasn't her deal? Let me see. I think when she ran for the Senate in New York. It probably makes her laugh because, if I recall correctly, she was not a resident of New York.
No,
it hadn't
no.
been for a great many years. And so suddenly, I don't know, whatever the hell, she bought a house or rented one or something. And presto, now she's qualified to become the senator, right? I think that's how it worked.
It was bizarre because I think she lives in Arkansas or possibly Washington, D.C., but then apparently she lived in New York and was then my senator. I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah.
Lucky me, though, right?
Doesn't matter.
I think that's all I have on this Pete Buttigieg show.
I think I have one more here, okay, Carl. You might dig, and that would be clip five.
All right.
And the other side basically is the faith of fear.
Yes.
And I was always raised with the faith of hope and love. And so, you know, for me, you know, being understanding and compassionate about our complexity and our differences is something that we're called to do. But we need people to work together to convey that more effectively. So we give, you know, more grounding to those who are people of faith like us, but don't fall into the category of politicized religion right now.
Well, there you go. See, now she doesn't want to politicize religion. However, she's telling everybody that doesn't believe as she does that they're from the faith of fear.
And,
you know, kind of stupid people. But she's not politicizing religion. Not at all.
That whole conversation was bonkers. It was obviously planted. They wanted to have that conversation. You know, you're a very religious woman. I know a lot of people don't know that. Oh, yes, I'm very religious. Oh, Pete. Oh, yeah, me too. Very religious. Very, very religious. who are you fooling with this shit? Like, Pete Buttigieg. Yeah. I don't know a lot of gay guys who are really into Christ. I'll just say it. I don't know. Maybe there are a lot. I doubt it.
People hear that bullshit and they eat it up. They eat it with a soup spoon.
When Pete gets down on his knees, it's not on a pew. All right, let's put it that way. Keep that in mind. All right. That whole conversation about religion was bizarre, and it went on for a long time.
Long time. But it's just so funny to say, you know, we don't want to politicize this. And she's taking shots at the other side, left and right.
Like, I know.
What the fuck, lady?
They can't help themselves. Everything is politicized. They can't help themselves.
Yeah.
So this podcast, I wrote down a note. These are two people who spend very little time shutting the fuck up. Mm. And to hear both of them go on, there wasn't one thing that was just like a single question and a single answer or a little fun back and forth. It was just long, drawn out, serious nonsense.
Right.
And I'm sorry I made us listen to that. My apologies. All right. Do you want to move on to the last podcast we're reviewing on this show?
Sure.
This is a show called Verdict with Ted Cruz. The co-host is Michael Knowles. Michael Knowles is an author and podcaster, and I don't know. I don't know who he is. I looked him up, and I was like, oh, he looks familiar. I think I know who he is, but I don't know why.
He's, you know, I'll tell you who he is. He's part of, there's a, you know, the Daily Wire crew, which is Shapiro, him, who the hell else? A couple others.
Yeah.
Andrew Klavan, right? And I guess there's been some churn or turmoil over there lately because Klavan, who does a pretty good show, he's pretty, you know, he's easy to listen to, and he's articulate. Suddenly he vanished. It was the strangest thing. I would listen to him, you know, once, twice a week. He had a daily show, and suddenly he was gone for 2 weeks with no explanation from anyone. And people are, you know, chiming in online. Where the hell is Klavan? Blah, blah, blah. Is he dead? Whatever. And then he comes back for like two shows. And this guy's, he's up there, you know, he's in his late 60s. And he's, his two shows are fucking reviewing video games. So he went from totally political, and now he's doing a show that some, you know, some millennials should be doing. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then he comes back again, and he's now he's just doing a once a week show. So I don't know what happened over there, but Michael Knowles is part of that crew.
Does Michael Knowles host his own show on there?
I think he does because they would, they would frequently, you know, sort of, sometimes they do bits together or Knowles would phone in, vice versa and so forth. But it seems like Klavan has been demoted and Knowles is still at it.
So the takeaway I had from this show is, now we all know Ted Cruz has zero personality. He's not a dynamic guy. He's not someone that you want to hear on a radio show or podcast. I thought Michael Knowles was pretty good, though. They seemed to have a good chemistry, and he kept the show moving. Although I listened to a podcast that just came out recently for a little bit, and this is what he starts off the show. This is what Michael Knowles says, and I don't know if I believe it.
I have missed all of you. Thank you so much to everyone who's been writing in asking, where is Verdict?
Bullshit!
People are writing in because Verdict is like, why can't there isn't a new Verdict out? What's Ted Cruz doing?
Where is it? I need it.
I'm not buying it. But real quick, I'll give you an example of Ted Cruz and his lack of personality. This is some serious dead air. So hang with me here. It's going to get silent for a little bit. But this is our buddy Ted.
That pissed me off. Pfizer literally the week after the election said, hey, look, we've cured it now.
Convenient.
We have a vaccine, and it's like, I'm trying to keep this PG rated, so I'm not going to say actually what I wanted to say there, but they couldn't have announced it the week before the election.
No,
of course they
no.
could have.
Who's going to get offended if Ted Cruz calls Pfizer assholes on his podcast?
Right.
Go ahead and just say assholes instead of that dead air there where you're trying to think of a word that means assholes, but isn't assholes.
Right. Well, that's part of his shtick, I guess. You know, he's been having this Twitter war with Seth Rogen.
No, I didn't know about that.
Oh yeah, it's been going on for days, and you know, Rogen's like every tweet from Rogen is, you know, "fuck you, cocksucker," you know, "suck my ass," and so on. And Ted's replies are like, "Well, I found some of your movies amusing, but you really need to clean up your act on Twitter." I'm like, it's the most bizarre thing you've ever seen.
Weird. Are they in on it? Are they like trying to promote each other?
No. It's not. I mean, it's not some, what's that fake wrestling thing they call? I forget
too.
No, it seems pretty real.
All right. So what did you think about this show? Do you have any clips that summarize this one for you?
I do. I thought that, you know, it's the funny thing is, well, I'll get into it when we do a clip, but Baghdad Birthday Fatherhood. Give it, if you want to click on that.
All right.
Washington, D.C., which frankly resembles Baghdad these days, all of the lockdowns, all of the heightened tensions. Senator, it's good to see you again.
Let me say to all our viewers, it's good to be back with you. In addition to everything Michael listed that has happened, we also had Christmas, we had New Year's, I turned 50 years old. And,
that's right.
And you, Michael, became a father. Simon John Knowles, your son, came into the world, and so that... That is highly consequential. Let me say congratulations. And let me start, but before we dive into constitutional law and what's happening in the country, let me just ask you, how is it being a dad?
It is so great. I appreciate your mentioning it. Some people don't know that actually we had been keeping the pregnancy kind of quiet, and two of the first people to know about it were you, Senator, and John Voight, because we were filming that earlier episode of Verdict, and I think it was John said, "Michael, lad, are you a father yet? I forget. Are you a father?" And I said, "Funny you should ask. Kind of funny that it's going to be you two guys who find out first, but yes, as of a few weeks ago, I am going to be a father."
I heard this and I thought, what the fuck is wrong with these guys? Knowles does this setup at calling Washington, D.C. Baghdad. And then they do this complete fucking 180 into fatherhood. And the other guy had a birthday. And I was waiting for him to say, I went to the dentist and I had two cavities. Then I got a colonoscopy. What the fuck? I mean, these guys are unbelievably bad. And then the John Voight shit. It's like, hey, dig me. I'm a star fucker. The first people to find out my wife was knocked up were you and John Voight. And let me tell you something else. I've met John Voight on several occasions. He's not from the South or Scotland. I don't know what the hell accent that guy was doing, but that's not Voight. I was like, my head was spinning like the kid in The Exorcist when I heard this.
It's a good point because this was the first podcast he's put out since January 6th. And of course, Ted Cruz was there in the Capitol building when it was stormed. And he's got stories to tell about it. So I think this guy's like, let's get into it. And Ted Cruz immediately halts the brakes like, yeah, but isn't being a father just the greatest thing that could ever happen to someone?
It's absurd. Yeah. And you know what? That's like rule number one. I've got two kids and the last thing I ever talk about are my kids. You know why? Because nobody gives a shit about anybody's kids but their parents. That's it. Don't do it. Don't go there.
The only thing people care less about is that you had a birthday.
We all have a birthday every fucking year, dude.
It's not that big of a deal.
It's not. Yeah. Yeah. It was just like, what? Are you kidding me? So then they have the next thing is this. I have one Ted Segway from hell. You know, you're a pro, man. I know you. I know you value good production. I think you're going to like this Segway here, Carl.
As I was looking at that, what initially struck me was just the weirdness of five House members, five senators, five Supreme Court justices. I was like, well, gosh, that's an odd historical creature. But as I was looking at the two choices we were facing, I wanted a third option.
That's the big moment, the big reveal. Dun, 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 the third option. Cue the music. What the fuck?
So the cut on that, the edit on that was bad. And I know the reason why, because I was trying to clip things from these guys. Ted Cruz never stops talking. He never completes a sentence and then moves on to the next sentence.
Yeah.
So it's hard to clip him saying anything succinctly. It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. He's a typical politician windbag.
Yes. Sure. Correct. Yeah.
So then after that nonsense, Knowles asks him a very simple question.
Okay. Right?
And you can see that clip there. Knowles is... simple question, which was like a 12-second setup.
Let's begin with January 6th. Reading the Electoral College votes at the joint session of Congress, the objection to the votes, the riot that ensued afterward. You were there. I was not. What happened?
Okay.
All right. Now, that's a very simple, succinct question,
correct?
Right?
Yep.
If you go, and please don't play all of this, like 5-6 seconds will do. Because you're bleeding from your ears. Ted's filibuster answer.
I was not. What happened?
I think it's helpful to take it back really starting about a week earlier.
Okay, stop. That's all you need. This answer, Carl, from Ted goes on for 5 entire minutes uninterrupted.
Yeah.
And he starts getting into it's like homework. It's audio homework. He's quoting the history and the parliamentary procedure and so on and so forth. And I realized to myself as I listened, I said, same as always. The reason the right always gets its ass handed to, they have no fucking idea how to communicate. They really don't. It's homework. It's facts, it's figures. It's never an emotional play. They suck. The last guy to do it good was Reagan, and then Trump was pretty good at it, except he pissed off half of everyone he talked to when he did speak. They just don't know how.
It's sound bites. It's been that way for decades. You got to talk in sound bites.
Yes.
And yeah, I know I listened to that part too, And Ted's so fucking proud of himself. I had to go back to 1876. And, you know, they had a similar situation. And in 1877, what they did was, and this was some crazy shit. So what I did is I said, we should do this crazy shit like these guys. It's like, all right, what are you fucking running for president? Shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. It's like that old adage. What is it? You know, you ask somebody what time it is. They tell you how to build a watch.
Right.
That's what they do. That's what they do.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right. This is, for some reason, like cutesy banter, but the music to this show is very serious. So it kind of doesn't fit with this intro here.
Lockdowns, executions, men in dresses. This is Verdict with Ted Cruz. I want to be very clear that those things will not be occurring on Verdict with Ted Cruz. We will be discussing those topics.
I'm just being real clear. I ain't dressing in drag for you, Mike.
No, that's, we'll do a lot for ratings, but we won't do that. I want to thank, of course.
I'll let you dress in drag.
I don't know. I got to renegotiate my contract here.
Oh, hilarious. So cutesy and funny. Didn't it sound like we're going to watch like Crossfire from the 80s or some of that music?
It did. It did. Or that's like Dennis Prager uses that kind of heavy duty, you know, Thundering Clouds audio.
So they play that, and then Ted Cruz goes, oh, I'm not going to dress in drag for you. All they were missing were the sound effects.
You know, it's, you think about this, Carl. And again, when I'm doing this, it's, my head is spinning because, you know, these aren't, you know, garage band caliber people.
Right.
They've got, you know, the Daily Wire is very well financed. I don't know who's behind it, but Knowles isn't doing it for spare change. Shapiro certainly isn't. I mean, that guy's doing insanely well.
Yep.
So these guys are well paid for what they're doing. And they've got Teddy Boy, who's, you know, very highly placed in a, you know, massive political party. Yet what they put together is absolute shit.
You know
what's wrong with these people? It's just mind-blowing.
It's taken us almost an hour to get to this point. Thank you for making this point. For some reason, everyone thinks they can do a podcast. I know it's easy to do. I know it's very easy to record yourself talking and put it up on the internet and let people download it. But it doesn't mean you should do it or can do it.
Yeah.
These shows are terrible.
Terrible.
No one's listening to this shit. I guarantee it. It's unlistenable.
No. You know, I saw, like, did a great take on that, Carl, and it wasn't in reference to podcasts. It was just comedy in general. And I saw it somewhere. I saw Seinfeld in the past year or two talking. You know, I mean, nobody's done any better than the fucking guy. He's a centimillionaire, always hits it out of the park. Boom. I mean, the guy's just the consummate pro, and he's very damn funny. And he was talking about how, you know, I was coming up, and when I bump into guys from the old neighborhood, and they say, you know, I could have done what you did, but I went another direction. Seinfeld goes, yeah, And most people fucking think that.
Yeah.
And it's a strange thing. They do it with podcasting. They do it with writing. You know, I've done some writing. I have several books published and so forth. So many people say, I'm a writer. Really? Are you? No, but nobody ever says, I'm a neurosurgeon or I'm an architect.
Right.
You know, they feel like they put a fuck. It's the strangest thing. They think they can type, so then they can write. And with podcasting, they can flick on a mic, get an audio signal, boom, I'm a podcaster.
And that's true of most podcasters, but these people should know better.
They should know better. And even if they don't know better, their handlers should guide them better.
Yes. Speaking of which, there was some advice that Ted Cruz's handler gave him when he was running for president, and I thought this was important for everybody to know.
One bit of advice that I was given is never, ever, ever eat the corn dog. And this is very good advice. So both Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann fell afoul of it.
Yep.
And you got photographs that let's just say were not the photographs they were hoping to characterize their campaign.
No, not flattering.
This dude is fucking corny.
So, the one thing
said that?
Oh, that was Michael Rappaport. The one thing that I will give Ted Cruz credit for, as opposed to like Pete Buttigieg, is at least they have some type of lighthearted conversations from time to time. It's not all we got to take over the world and everything's resting on these next 24 hours or else we're all going to die. Fucking nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was kind of funny too. So he's talking about, Ted made a comment that if Joe Biden wins, the week after, COVID will be cured. And he said this before the election. And then it was re-brought up to the surface by journalists like a month or two later after that. And he makes an observation that I thought was kind of fun.
Well, actually, at the time I gave the interview, I mean, it aired, but it didn't get a lot of attention. And then last week,
yes,
it seemed every lefty journalist in America discovered it and went on TV ranting and raving about it.
I saw it. I said, why? Where did they dig this up? Are they all on an email chain together?
There clearly is a, you know, Commie Reporters of America listserv that they're all on.
Yeah.
I just thought it was funny they called out journalists as communists.
I like that.
I do too, considering where his position's at. That's pretty funny. He just called everyone a communist. And I agree with that. There's another funny thing that he said. Maybe you've heard this before because you live in California. But he's talking about Governor Newsom, and he had a name for him that I had not heard before.
We have my governor, Mr. Mussolini, in office out there.
Have you heard Mussolini?
I had heard that, and I forgot it. It's a funny term. I just call him Captain Hair Gel. But I like Mussolini better. It's better, yeah.
Oh, boy. What's going to happen with that guy, Larry? Have you signed the petition yet?
I have. I think there's a strong – here's what I think. I've seen this movie before, not long after I came to California from New York. And they had this drip in here named Gray Davis, who was fucking things up like Hogan's goat. And there was a recall. And they sure as shit, they recalled him. And if I remember correctly, he was replaced by Arnold. And Arnold went to Sacramento all bowed out and, you know, pumped up. And they promptly chewed him up and spat him out like, you know, a bunch of pumpkin seeds. And he was done. So the thing is, I strongly suspect they will flip Newsom, but they'll just replace him with another chooch.
Well, yes, I would agree that the probability is there for that to happen. Yes, that would make sense.
Yeah, I think don't quote me on these numbers, but I think they need like 1.6 million signatures, something like that. And the last time I heard, they were at, I don't know, like 900,000. And the deadline is March. So they got a good shot at making it, I think. I know this. Newsom is definitely worried because he just hired some pricey spin doctorette who worked with the Clintons for years. So he's concerned.
Surprised he didn't already have that.
Yeah.
All right. I thought this was interesting. They point out because they're talking about this is the most recent episode, the one that you're playing clips from after the January 6th debacle. And they point out a Reuters poll that they were surprised by.
Reuters polling shows 39% of Americans believe the election was rigged.
Only 39%? What are the other fucking people thinking is happening here? I was shocked by that. They're like, can you believe 39% of people think that? I'm like, I can't believe it's not 72. What do you mean? Can I believe it? Yes.
Well, that was, you know, it was Ted's whole effort to, you know, Ted's, he's had to, I think, somewhat in this, save his political hide, because and when I listened to it, he used the word in reference to those people that stormed the Capitol. He called them terrorists probably 24 times within that podcast. And, you know, I don't know. I just can't get behind a yo-yo and I'm wearing a fucking buffalo hat. And all those other idiots taking selfies with cops and so forth. Were they assholes? Yeah, some of them, a lot of them were. Terrorists? I don't know. Were they?
Oh, that's the new thing now, because if it's domestic terrorism, that's how they're going to try to get Bitcoin, because it funds domestic terrorism.
Yeah, well, they can try all they want. Janet Yellen is much fucking mistaken if she thinks she's going to do that, because it is global.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I understand even like in South Korea, they have like cryptocurrency salons that are plush, you know, coffee houses. You can go in there and sit down at a computer terminal and some, you know, hot looking chick will serve you tea or whatever the fuck and dick around with your crypto accounts. I mean, in other parts of the world, that stuff it's now. And just because that fossil doesn't like it doesn't mean it's going away.
Well, it's not just her who doesn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of powerful people who want to have control over our monetary system,
sure,
who do not like it. So we'll see where that battle ends up.
Yeah.
You got anything else from this Ted Cruz podcast?
Yeah, I got one more of Teddy doing some, you know, poly speak, as I call it. And okay. I think that's the way it's labeled. Cruz's poly speak.
narrative that because he said repeatedly, and he said over and over again, he won by a landslide, there was massive fraud, it was all stolen everywhere. You've never heard me use language like that.
Okay, there's the essence of your politician right there,
right.
Isn't it?
Yep.
You know, it's not what's being said, it's the way I say it, says Cruz. And every slick career politician, that's how they operate. It's never from the heart, never from the gut. It's how have I repackaged, recut what I want to say, so it's almost unrecognizable and keeps me and my political career safe.
That's a good point, because on this show, he's letting his guard down a bit. He's saying things that he wouldn't normally say in a TV interview or something like that. And this whole idea that he agrees there was a lot of fraud involved in the election, but then says, yeah, but I don't say it the way that Trump says it. Like, but what's the difference? So you're admitting that politicians know how to say shit, how to bullshit people. And a guy like Trump, who's from the outside of the business world, is also, Trump's a little different than just regular business guys, but obviously that guy's not as composed and doesn't know all the rules to being a politician. And he's just going out there and saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how they operate. It's how they think. That's why the world is so fucked up.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait to never listen to another politician on a podcast again. Holy shit. That was brutal today. And I thank you. Going through this. Oh, I wanted to tell you one more thing that I thought was funny.
Yeah.
Just to real quick go back to the NPR politics podcast. Mm-hmm. Because these people think they're so fucking smart and they're just so up their own asses, I want to read to you the description of this show. I don't think it's proper English. Every weekday, NPR's best political reporters are there to explain the big news coming out of Washington and the campaign trail, period. They don't just tell you what happened, period. They tell you why it matters, period. Every afternoon, period. Are those three separate sentences?
No.
They don't just tell you what happened. They tell you why it matters every afternoon.
Yeah.
I think that's like one sentence.
It doesn't matter. We live in a STEM-educated world. I saw this morning somebody said that, who's the new Kelly McEnany? Jen Psaki? Or, what's her name?
I don't know her name. The redheaded chick.
Whatever
it
is. She actually said, in one of her first stand-ups there at the podium, she said, for all intensive purposes.
Oh, no.
Okay? So.
She's a communications director.
Nothing surprises me.
Communications!
Yeah. Nah, doesn't matter.
Oh, no. All right. Well... Larry, how are we going to end this thing? We haven't talked about that.
Jeez, I don't know. Dan, that's a good question.
Should we have like a sign-off or something? Like, you should say, take no shit, and I'll say, sleep well, every pony? I don't know. How do you want to do this?
Yeah, sure. Take no shit.
Sleep well, every pony. And I'll just play our music again or something, I guess.
It's showtime.
It's not showtime. It's show overtime.
Show overtime. I really like that.
Yeah, so I took your zombies thing. I was hoping they would match up key-wise with the music in the Who Are These Podcasts intro song. It did not, so I had to take my guitars out of that.
But you know what? That's part of its charm. There's a little bit of dissonance there.
It is a little dissonance.
It imparts a very weird slant to it, and I like that.
Also, I put that together about 30 minutes before we started podcasting. I didn't give myself a lot of time to perfect it, unfortunately. Oh, Larry, thank you so much, buddy.
Carl, thank you so much, man. How you doing up there in the cold zone? Okay, everything in Rochester?
We got a shit ton of snow dumped on us today.
Yuck.
Yeah, I know. And it's funny because people who live in warmer climates, oh, but you guys are used to that shit. No, I hate it. I hate snow every fucking time it comes, every year. I dread it. I don't look forward to it. And then it comes and I'm pissed.
Yeah, that's why I left, you know. And once I got here, I was here like 5 or 6 years and I was drinking somewhere, you know, one of these outside places, which there are jillions in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And it was like it had been like 115 degrees that day. And I was bitching about the heat. And this guy turns to me and goes, "What are you complaining about, pal? You don't ever have to shovel heat."
That's funny.
And he's right.
Yes. I always love talking to you, Larry. Thank you so
always
much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, man. Love working with you, Carl.
Yeah, man.
Ton of fun.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.